that Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, they just disagree on how.
We're gonna get across that wasteland, and we're gonna do it together.
Fallout. All episodes available now on Prime Video.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Wildcat Radio 2.0. Bear down, you beautiful people.
What's up, everybody? This is Wildcat Radio 2.0. I'm Adam Green. He's Brett Barry. And Brett, last week's show, we're like, hopefully next week we're doing some more basketball game previews because it was the NCAA tournament. And yeah, that did not go according to plan. The Arizona men lost in the first round. The women lost in the second round. And hello, off season, where some of the players are still with the teams. So, good times.
There is still most of a team on the roster, as far as I know.
Oh, man. I don't know how much time we need to spend. It's been a week now. We're recording on Thursday the 23rd. It's been a week now since Arizona lost to Princeton 59-55 in a game where, you know, Arizona had looked worse, right? Like, in most of their losses this season, they got their asses kicked. They were leading for most of this game. They had double-digit leads a couple of times, including late in the second half, and then they just stopped scoring points. They couldn't make a shot. They couldn't get guys to take shots, missed some bunnies, gave up a couple buckets, and it's like the pressure got to them, and just every flaw that Arizona had this season offensively, which was, or even defensively, like every flaw just like showed itself in the last like 5 minutes of that game, and they lost to a 15 seed.
Yeah, and you know, Princeton was, I think, generally considered one of the better 15 seeds, but that doesn't mean that Arizona should lose to them. And they just got, I don't think they're the better team, but they were the better team that day.
I'm not even sure that's true. Arizona shot a better field goal percent. Like, Arizona won pretty much every statistical category, just they didn't win on the scoreboard, right? Like, upsets happen.
Yeah.
15, I mean, granted, Arizona's now the first program in history to lose to a 15 seed twice as a 2 seed, but whatever. If you're a 2 seed long enough, you know, often enough, that things like that'll happen. But that wasn't the script for an upset. Right? Not for a 15-2 upset. Arizona, box score-wise, was better. Like, they made a higher field goal percentage. Like, Princeton made four threes. Four. Like, Arizona lost the battle of the rebounds, which is ridiculous. But that's, like, it.
Well, if I had told you that Princeton would have scored 59 points, you'd be like, oh, cool, we won by 20. Right? Yeah, no, I think this is where the game is played on the court, and it's not in the box score. And I think what we all saw, and even the players immediately afterwards, you know, I don't want to go to the cliche and the narrative BS, because you know how I feel about those kind of things, but Princeton just, they wanted it more. And, you know, I think you and I talked about it after the game. You know, I think you're right that it exposed all of the fatal flaws that we knew were there and were a risk. And like, so it's not surprising in that sense. But the thing that jumps out to me, to really distill it down, and it's a reframing of the, you know, who wants it more thing. This Arizona roster collectively has a lot of guys that like to win. And I'm not sure there's one guy that hates to lose. And that's what matters, and you need, and that's, you know, that could be what we've talked about all year, the dog on the team. The dog hates to lose more than they like to win, right? And I think that's what showed up in this game.
Yeah, maybe. like the players know Kirk Kreisa, Pelle Larsson after the game, and there's more on Kreisa. We'll have in a little bit, of course. We know he entered the transfer portal, but they kind of talked about the energy that maybe they just didn't have it. That, you know, it was lacking, and I hate that commentary generally speaking, because to me, when people point to their effort or they point to their energy, that's a way of saying, well, we lost because of us, not because the other team did something, right? Because it's on us. We didn't come out with the energy. We didn't come out playing as hard as we needed to. Therefore, if we would have done that, we would have won. But I believe it here. I wrote about the Frazee Desert. So I'm like, I believe that because talent-wise, this wasn't an issue of talent, right? Arizona was the more talented team, and I get it. Like, Arizona's had some issues, like their guard play, which I thought was going to play well in the tournament or had the potential to, was miserable. Other than Tubelis and Ballo, no one played well in that game. Courtney Ramey played okay a couple of spurts. But even still, with all that, Arizona, we saw them. This is a team that beat Tennessee. This is a team that beat UCLA twice, team that beat Indiana, right? Beat San Diego State, beat Creighton. And I get it, maybe earlier in the season, Arizona was playing better than they were late in the season, but the talent was clearly there. And yet, when it came down to it, when they needed a bucket, Tubelis missed some close ones, okay, and there was no one else, right? They just didn't have what they needed to get it done late. And I don't know, like, they didn't win a lot of super close games this season, but I thought the UCLA game and the Pac-12 tournament was one that would show, hey, they can come back and win a game. This one, they were leading most of the way, and it wasn't until the final minutes where Princeton finally took the lead. And I wonder how much that hurt Arizona, because it's like, you're up. It's like, okay, just hang in there, hold on to the lead, that's fine. You're not having to play as hard to catch up, to really lock in. You're just kind of saying, okay, watch that clock, hope it ticks down, which shouldn't be the case. You should beat the 15 seed by 15 to 20. But I never thought they were going to lose the game until the very end, because it's like Arizona was up and it's like, yeah, they're getting the shots they want. They'll make a three or something, you know, and they just couldn't get it. They couldn't do what they needed. The team that was one of the best offenses in the country lost because it scored 55 points.
Well, and if you recall in the first half, there were decent stretches where Arizona was workmanlike in asserting themselves as the better team, not being too tight, not being too loose, just like, hey, we have a game plan we're going to execute on. We're going to get the ball down low. You know, we're not necessarily trying to just, you know, go up 30 and then take the foot off the gas. It was a very businesslike approach.
Yeah.
But as one of the themes we've talked about on this pod numerous times, you know, consistency is what it equates to mental toughness. And this team has struggled with that in terms of consistency, which I would say is struggled with mental toughness. And that's kind of goes along with the theme, because then when they get knocked off their, you know, their confidence level, their margin for error narrows. And I think they know it. And some of those guys that are, you know, the players that are the impact on the margin, the guys like Cedric Henderson, the guy that I've called the barometer all season, Pelle Larsson, even Kirk Kreisa, who has maybe the most, you know, bravado and confidence on the team that approaches that dog mentality to some extent. You know, Pelle Larsson had what, 2 points that game?
Yeah, four fouls.
More fouls than points. Cedric Henderson, 2 points. Pelle Larsson, 2 points. That ain't gonna do it.
No, they needed more. Tubelis was fine. Like, I know he didn't play well in last year's tournament. He was fine in this one. It was a short run. He had 22 points, 5 rebounds. He did have 6 turnovers. He wasn't great. Umar Ballo playing with a broken hand. Like, you could tell that was bothering him. 13 points, 12 rebounds. Kind of do what he should have done against a smaller team like that. But the bigs didn't dominate, and Arizona got nothing from anyone else. So they lost. And like I said, it was kind of like the flaws that they had all kind of exposed themselves in this game, especially in the last 5 minutes of this game. And now they're out. And, you know, I did not expect that to happen, right? Like, you don't, even when we knew, like, this was a team that lost to Stanford, that lost to Utah, lost to ASU and Washington State at home. So they were fully capable of this. And yet, I don't think anyone anticipated them losing this game. And not like that. Like, Princeton would have made 14 threes, fine, whatever. It wasn't like that. Arizona lost because Arizona played bad. Now, why did Arizona play bad? Was it nerves? Was it just the flaws that they had? Was it just a clunker of a game at an inopportune time? Was it, you know, dedication? Was it effort? I don't know, but whatever it was, it cost them.
Yeah, I was just curious looking at the box score, Adam. You know, those guys I just mentioned Cedric Henderson, Pelle Larsson, Kirk Kurecsa. Mm-hmm. Those three guys combined for 84 minutes on the court and scored 8 points. That means collectively the three of them scored 1 point for every 12 minutes on the
right.
court.
No, they needed more. And very rarely has Arizona's offense been this bad. But Princeton did a great job of taking away. I don't even say why they took away Tubas and Balo, because Balo and Tubas were fine. But if you don't allow anything else from anyone else, then what Tubas and Balo did was not enough.
Well, and even then, I think they just knocked Arizona off balance, where they were daring Tubas to shoot the 15-foot jumper, especially early in the clock. And they played a pack line defense. And like Arizona's big still got, you know, some points.
But like they didn't get to the free throw line, which happens sometimes.
But also one of the ways this team gets free throw. It was a good game plan from Princeton. They're going to say, all right, Azuz Tabellis, you know, you work best in a system, but you're probably a better athlete offensively against our defense to go one on one against us. That's how he's going to draw fouls. And they're going to be like, all right, I'm going to play 4 feet off you. So you take away that and say, I'm going to give you the 15-foot jumper. And he didn't want to, because that was also not with Arizona. Like they used Arizona's game plan against them.
Right? Arizona did a good job of trying to get the ball down low. they weren't jacking up shots.
But when there's five guys within 4 feet of Umar Balo, right?
Well, that's where Pelle Larsson hitting a three or two. Courtney Ramey hitting a couple of threes. Kirk Kurecsa, I think he hit his second one. I'm like, oh, this might be a good game, and he didn't make another one from there. Henderson even. That's where someone in Arizona made 3 3-pointers that game out of 16 attempts, and most of them were wide open. You know, like that's a problem, because that allows a team like Princeton to pack it in. Now, that was the flaws. Arizona didn't have consistent 3-point shooting, but wow.
Well, and you gave up 9 offensive rebounds to an athletically and size-wise inferior team.
Yeah.
And you know, if you're Arizona, the thing that, you know, they want to get out and run, they want to run the pace, right? The best way to do that is to start it on the defensive end, and that doesn't just mean turnovers. That means finishing defensive possessions. That means not giving up rebounds. Right?
I know when Arizona had, I think it was like a 10 or a 12-point lead in the second half, I think Arizona got a stop, was a long rebound that turned into a three. Got another stop, another rebound that turned into another bucket. And instead of maybe pushing your lead from 12 to 15 or 16 and probably putting the game away, it allowed Princeton to come back into it.
Yeah, like there's no world in which Princeton should have out-rebounded Arizona in a game, period. And they did.
So yeah, what a way to finish the season, right? Like, I don't think either of us thought they were going to win a championship, and I'm not sure any of us thought they were going to the Final Four. But the expectation, especially when you're a 2 seed, is to at least get to the second game.
I mean,
right?
To be fair, I think I'm pretty sure it was before this game where I told some people that, like, I think there's an equal likelihood of them making the Final Four as losing in the first round or two.
And well, that was the running joke. Like, if they could get through the first weekend, then they might win the whole damn thing because they beat the good teams and lose to the teams.
As most jokes are, it wasn't really a joke. It was based in truth.
But, like, of course, people aren't going to look at this season and be like, okay, well, they did win the Maui Invitational. They did win the Pac-12 tournament. They did beat how many ranked teams? You know, it wasn't a bad season, but when you lose it like that, if they would have lost in the Sweet 16, it would have been viewed differently. If they would have won this game but lost the next game to Missouri, it would have been viewed differently, right? But because you lose in the first round, and granted, thank you, Purdue, for, you know, kind of taking some of the taking the spotlight from Arizona in terms of, like, bad first-round exits. But losing a game like that the way they did changes the narrative. Like, after last season, when Arizona lost to Houston in the Sweet 16, it wasn't, oh, wow, what a disaster. Like, hey, this was a great season, right? They had won a lot of games, won the Pac-12, won the Pac-12 tournament, won the Vegas tournament they were in. And, yeah, they lost to Houston in the Sweet 16, but, hey, they won a couple of tournament games, not bad. This is different. This leads to a lot. It's led to, I mean, it's a week now. It's led to a lot of people like, Where does this team go, right? And we're starting to see some of that now. Kirk Kurecsa entered the transfer portal. Adama Ball entered the transfer portal. There's talk about, you know, Tubas maybe going pro, which would make sense to me. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Arizona, it's not a turning point. It's not a fork in the road for the program. It's Tommy Lloyd's, you know, second full offseason with Arizona. But they're certainly at a time where the run that they had of the last, like, you can even say 3 seasons, Sean Miller's last year, and then the first 2 Tommy Lloyds, like, that era is done. Like, that team is over with. And next year, the Wildcats are going to look a lot different. And I imagine most people, even after Arizona won 28 games, and even after Arizona won their tournaments, It'd be like, you know what? It's time for a change. Let's see a different roster. Let's see a different style out there.
I don't think you're going to see a different style.
Well, I don't mean style, but different like mentality, like type of player, different makeup of the roster. Yeah.
Well, let me also just insert this into the conversation. Everybody that thinks that Tommy Lloyd is a terrible coach and should be fired, just shut up. Like, you know, go touch some grass, avoid the message boards.
Do people think he's a bad coach? Like, I think he's learning. He's still learning to be a head coach.
I don't think you accidentally are the fastest coach to 60 wins or whatever it was. And you know, if you think back to preseason with all the roster turnover last offseason, I think if you had said you're going to be a 2 seed in the tournament, people would have been like, really? That's great. What a great job by Tommy Lloyd.
But if they said you're going to be a 2 seed and you're going to lose in the first round, people would have thought differently. Like, the end oftentimes overshadows what preceded it. But I'm just saying, like, where Arizona's at right now, I think people are ready for the next chapter, ready for the new era, for the new, and there's going to be a lot of turnover. Like, they lost 3 guys to the NBA last season, and they lost Justin Kyra, so 4 key guys. They brought a lot of guys back, and next season's team is going to look very different than this season's team. Very different.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the best things that's going to come out of the season heading into next year is, you know, the world's most famous, 17-year-old, Kylan Boswell, who, you know, honestly, people forget he wasn't even really supposed to be playing. He was coming early, reclassing because he is coming back from injury, right? But also, you know, it's one nice thing, Adam. I think everyone collectively has come around to my dog narrative that this roster needs, because I think everyone sees it and it's very readily apparent, and it needs to be ideally, it needs to be somebody that's also ideally your best defender and best athlete, maybe not your best player, but a guy that sets the tone.
Well, they need guys who will take the ball to the bucket, who aren't afraid of contact, who can go through people, maybe even go over them, right? And can get theirs. And like with Kirk Caruso, like we can start there. He enters the portal. Wow, was he a polarizing player? And like, I liked Caruso. Yeah. I think there's a lot of people are going to underrate and underestimate his impact on this team. You don't be the starting point guard for a team that wins 60 something games over 2 years, earns a 1 seed and a 2 seed because you suck.
And right? led the Pac-12 in assists, like, and threes.
Where is he going to rank in terms of like all time Arizona point guards? Closer to the middle than the top, and probably closer to the bottom, you know, part of the middle. He was fine. He was a decent point guard for this offense. Could Arizona upgrade that position? I hope so. Right, I hope they can get a guy who's. I mean, Chris is a good passer, not a very good defender, and was allergic to 2-point shots. Like, that's a problem. You need someone who can try to get to the bucket, right? Who can make some plays from there. That wasn't Kirk Caruso, but that's a loss. Adama Ball, so much potential, but that he couldn't carve out a role this season was disappointing. Hopefully, he goes somewhere, maybe a lower level, and lights it up, because whatever he was lacking, you know, the talent is still there, right? The potential is still there. If Tubelis leaves, that hurts. And then we'll see what other players leave. It's era of the transfer portal. But I think it's pretty obvious what Arizona men's basketball needs. Like, you're talking about the dogs. They need someone who's going to be aggressive, ideally defensively too, right? KJ Lewis, incoming freshman, is supposed to be that type of player, I think. An aggressive, bowling ball type, not afraid of contact. Last season, where this is where I'm kind of feeling optimistic. I think Caruso leaving, my guess is he was informed that his role was going to be different, that Kylan Boswell was going to be the lead point guard, or that Arizona had plans to bring in another point guard and maybe bring Caruso off the bench or have him play off the ball more. He's like, no, thanks. I'd rather be the starting point guard somewhere. I've earned that. Cool. But that to me shows that Arizona has a plan, that Tommy Lloyd understands what this team needs, what this program needs to take another step forward. And he's not afraid to go after it.
Yeah, I know. I think that's right. And like, you know, in an ideal world, I think Kirk Caruso as the first guard off the bench that's a great situation on a really good team. You know, I do not like the notion of him moving to the 2-guard spot with Kylan Boswell starting, because he's just not a 2-guard. As much as he's, you know, allergic to 2-pointers, as you put it, he can't guard the other team's best wings. Right. He's undersized to do that. I think he is vastly underappreciated as a facilitator beyond just getting assists. Like, the ball moves better and there's generally more intelligent decisions made on the offensive end, and the offense does better. You know, I think Brian Peterson, friend of the pod, did some analysis where, like, yeah, Arizona's turnovers are up, but the assists and points go up even more so. And that was Kirk Carissa's doing, right? Mm-hmm. But I think your point is well taken, where, you know, he's earned the right to not come off the bench. But also, you know, this is Kylan Boswell's team next year right now, in my mind. Like, he has a little bit of, I think, that dog mentality in it. And at a point guard position, that's good. I think he's a good defender. I think he's still even maturing physically because, again, he's just about to turn 18 and he's only going to get better. And if you put the right players around him, you know, if Tubelis leaves, yeah, that hurts offensively. But you got to imagine Balo's back. And what happens if you put Balo with, you know, a athletic four that can defend, rebound, and hit an open jump shot?
Right. You know?
I guess all this is to say, I tend to agree. I think there is a plan. I think there is a notion of what they want to do. There's been no reason to, in my mind, the uncertainty, I think, doesn't sit well with most Arizona fans. But I think we need to be okay with that. And that's, to some extent, that's modern college basketball. And we need to trust, you know, don't panic until it's, you know, the season's about to start and we go, oh God, who's on our roster?
Kind of. Yeah, like, there's obvious holes and there's going to be more holes to fill. But I think, I'm guessing Tommy Lloyd has a plan. Like I said, I think we all watched this team this past season. We all saw what happened. We're all going to see who they lose and be like, okay, this is what they need, the type of player they need. And to Tommy Lloyd's credit, he did a lot of this winning. Yeah, these were Sean Miller's, but these weren't his guys. Now, did he like Kirk Carissa? Yes, he did. I'm sure he did. He likes Azulis Tubelis, right? He had to kind of re-recruit all these guys when he took over, and he won a lot with them. But are they the types of players that can get Arizona to the next level? Like, yes, I think Kirk Carissa can be that type of guy. I think, and the guy thing that kind of stinks for him is he never entered a Pac-12 tournament or the NCAA tournament healthy. Like, Arizona last two seasons, like, the Pac-12 tournament, it took a heavy toll on them, right? Like, what did it cost them to win the Pac-12 tournament, possibly more victories in the NCAA tournament, which is unfortunate. You know, was Kirk Carissa as injured this year as he was last year? I don't think so. Like, no. He seemed like he was fine, but he just wasn't making shots. I don't know if his shoulder was a problem. I know he cut his hand. Umar Balo breaking his hand. Like, that didn't help, I'm sure. But just Arizona, like you mentioned, you know, type of four maybe next to Umar Balo. One thing I kind of thought of watching the Princeton game, it reminded me of the year Arizona got run out of the gym by Buffalo, when you had DeAndre Ayton and Dusan Ristić both in the starting lineup. And it's just the style of college basketball. If you're going to play two bigs, one of them better be able to defend. Like, kind of like Coloco last season, at least he could switch and get out on guys and was a shot blocker. Arizona had two bigs. Neither of them were good shot blockers. Neither one of them could really hit a 15 to 20 foot jumper. And neither one of them were like high flyers that could go get a lob that's 3 feet above the rim. Like, it was just different. So I'm excited to see what Tommy Lloyd does with this offseason, because I think last offseason, he was kind of hampered by not knowing if Coloco was going to go pro, not knowing if De'Lon Terry's going to go pro. The transfer portal was there, and there are certain guys Arizona either didn't have time to go after because they didn't know if the spot was open, or they couldn't offer them a starting role. Be like, hey, come here. You're going to play 30 minutes a game. Mm-hmm. Well, now Tommy Lloyd can go out there to the portal and be like, hey, this assumes Azulis Tubelis goes pro, and I imagine, I don't know what else he has to prove at the college level. It wouldn't shock me if he goes pro. If you can say, hey, look, it's a starting power forward spot. Oh, look, you know, our one, two, and three positions are all gone. You know, Carissa, Ramey, and Henderson, all gone. So top four position, 1, 2, 3, 4 are all open. Maybe Boswell should be the one, but even still, like, there's no entrenched guy. I imagine that's a pretty attractive and appealing sales pitch to say, come to Arizona, look at all these minutes you could start for us. You know, the job is there for the taking.
Yeah, and I think you combine that with what you talked about, some of those guys that left the year before, like De'Lon Terry wasn't a Tommy Lloyd recruit, but he developed into an NBA player pretty dramatically in his 1 year in Tommy Lloyd's system, right? He became a first round pick. Like, that's another thought I had. Like, nobody, I don't think anybody expected, you know, how much better would this year's of team been with a De'Lon Terry on the perimeter defensively and facilitating, right? But this is the nature of it. And if you're good at developing talent, and that should be Tommy Lloyd's biggest selling point. You know, Azulis Tubelis was a consensus All-American, I think I saw this week. Umar Balo, that's a Tommy Lloyd guy. And look at the growth he's shown in the last 2 years. And if he takes another step forward and you put him in the right positions to be successful, he's going to, you know, continue to prove that. You know, it's going to be a curious thing. You know, the transfer portal giveth, the transfer portal taketh away. I think this is Kerr Karisa's second time entering, because I think he did after Sean Miller got
he did too. Yeah, and then he came back. Yeah,
I mean, he can come back and then go back in, come back and then go back in, like a la Mejean Wright.
Mejean Wright style. Yeah.
But yeah, like
I'm going to root for him wherever he goes. Especially like, you know, Pac-12 or something like that. I like Kerr Karisa. I appreciate what he did for Arizona. I mean, his freshman year was a mess where he couldn't get eligible until like the very end. And then he was a starting point guard on two really good teams. Like, and he played hard. He gave it his all. He's flawed, limited, but he was a lot of fun.
I cannot describe how I'm either going to my head's going to explode from rage, or I'm just going to find it the most delicious thing ever when Kerr Karisa and Sean Miller at Xavier go to their Final Four before Arizona does. And like all of the combined awful bipolar takes that Sean Miller had and Kerr Karisa bipolar takes combine into, you know, one event horizon of Arizona fandom. And I hate all of their takes.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, like I said, we're recording on March 23rd. So Arizona, this is all subject to change in terms of portal, but like Brett said, the portal giveth, the portal taketh away. Right now it's the taketh away portion. Kerr Karisa, Adama Baller in the portal. Probably more to come, but I would imagine, like, when Tony Light has those conversations with his roster, it's basically saying, this is what our plan is. This is how you factor into it. I don't like a coach running guys out of town. I don't necessarily believe in that. But if you go to a guy and you're honest with him and say, hey, like, we're going to recruit this position. This is what we're going to do. Your role on this team next year might be 5 minutes a game, 6 minutes a game, if that. And that guy says, you know what? Appreciate that, coach. I'm going to look elsewhere. That's fine with me.
Yeah.
And I think Tommy Lloyd's probably had those hard conversations, because he got to live off of what happened his first year, where everything was so, I mean, that was a really good team. It ended up being a really good team. And he couldn't make huge changes after that. You know, you had to pretty much run that back the best he could. And by the time he was able to go portal shopping, he didn't have a lot to offer. Well, this time around, he's got a lot to offer. He'll have a lot, you know, plenty of minutes, plenty of shots in this offense, which you'd like to think will be attractive to high-end talent.
Yeah, plenty of good playing time available on the perimeter at Arizona.
Yeah, so, of course, we have more to talk about Arizona men's basketball, because, you know, whatever happens more with the portal, whatever happens with acquisitions, departures, and just the way this offseason goes, we will talk about that. But let's take a break, and we come back. The ladies won a game, but then their season ended shortly thereafter.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We're back, and by the time the Arizona women tipped off on Friday in their first game, was like, you know, your only hope. And they played well. They won their first game. You're like, okay, that was nice, right? And then they get to Maryland, and whoops, bad start. Arizona finished strong in the first half, and the third quarter was just really bad, and they couldn't recover. And Arizona lost to Maryland. Season over, and another disappointing tournament for the Arizona women.
Yeah, I mean, part of it, you know, if they weren't underseeded as a 7, I think they would have made it to the Sweet 16. You know, and they were in it against Maryland. That third quarter was just atrocious. I don't know if you got to watch, Adam.
It was bad.
You know, it was a thing where, you know, in women's basketball, I think more than men's, one or two elite players can really, really make the difference, especially if they have like freak size and athleticism. And
Diamond Miller was incredible.
Yeah. Diamond Miller and Cheyenne Sellers, like, they're like, you, like, it's like, oh, yeah, they're they're good players.
Really, right? Really good players.
And you know, there, you know, Arizona has some good youth that looked really good. You know, Paris Clark was getting some more minutes. Unfortunately, you know, not to jump ahead, but she was put her name in the portal, which is unfortunate.
Yes.
You know, and this is where Arizona, I think we talked about with PJ Brown of the Star, where, you know, Arizona's a good team, but there's this upper echelon of women's basketball that's just, it's a different level. you know, the Stanfords, though they lost the tournament too. And I think Utah may be the only team standing, and that's a team that Arizona beat. Was it once or twice, and should have beaten the other time if not for those questionable
beat
calls?
Beat them once, and as far as we're concerned, beat them twice. But no, you're right. Like, Arizona beat West Virginia, and just like as West Virginia was a 10 seed, Arizona did what they were supposed to do, right? And like, they're good, and they showed that. And against Maryland, like they had the lead at halftime. They came back in that game. And like, okay, they have a chance, but then the very best, and like PJ was saying, there's where Arizona fit in, like at their best, at Arizona's best, they were still at, you know, that second tier. Whereas these other programs, and Maryland's one of them, were at their best, this is what happens, right? Like, Arizona's margin for error was a lot thinner. And these other programs, like when they're good, they were really good. And I don't think it's like, it wasn't a surprising result. Like, Maryland was a 2 seed. Some 2 seeds win games in the tournament. It's crazy. So like, it wasn't like, you don't say like, oh wow, what a disaster of a tournament this was. You know, Kate Reese acquitted herself well. Shayna Pellington acquitted herself well. Like, they battled until the end in that game, and it was heartbreaking to see like their careers come to a close here in Arizona. But then the question becomes, as it kind of is for the men too, but focusing on the women here, is like, what's next, right? And then, like you said, the portal, it's taketh away early. And again, there's going to be additions. Arizona's, their recruiting class has been great. But Maddie Connor, portal. Paris Clark, portal. Lauren Ware, portal. Like, these are key players. Like, Lauren Ware come back from injury. Like, these are key players who we thought, especially Paris Clark, like, wow, what she could have been. And it makes you wonder, what's going on? What's the problem here? Or is there a problem here? Or is this just college basketball?
I think I'll go a level deeper. I think the portal news is a product of, you know, we've talked about it for the last year, even before the season started in the last offseason, that roster was deep.
Yeah.
Right. Partially from, you know, people sticking around a little bit longer with COVID eligibility, with great recruiting classes. You know, there was Adia Barnes made really high end transfer portal additions last offseason that they don't come here not to play. And, you know, some like people, you know, Maya Naji probably didn't play as many minutes as you might have expected or on an Arizona team a few years ago, but that's a sign of the depth on this team, right?
Mm-hmm. And Maya tweeted out there something like, she's staying, like she's not going anywhere. So that's good.
Yeah. Well, and she's going to play a lot next year.
You'd
right?
think so. Yeah.
You know, all those players have, you know, Maddie Connor's had some huge games. Lauren Ware has been a really valuable player. But to me, Paris Clark is by far the biggest loss there. But that, you know, she came across the country and didn't play as much as maybe she wanted to. So that sucks.
yes.
But, you know, if Adia Barnes has proven herself adept at one thing, it is filling out a roster with talent. And maybe this is a product of too much of a good thing can be a bad thing when it comes to loading the roster. But, you know, I don't think it's any cause for concern. And there's still all this young talent that I think is going to make it a different team next year. Maybe, you know, fundamentally better and more athletic, at least on offense.
Like, I'm all in on Adia Barnes. I'm not one of those people who think of questioning her. But where you have to wonder is, like, if this was such just a situation where there's too much talent on the roster, why didn't they win more games? Why didn't they go further? And that's kind of roster construction, getting the most out of the team. And you have to wonder if there was this much talent, someone was young, like Paris Clark was young, right? Freshman. Mm-hmm. But if there's that much talent, was this roster maximized? Like, I think on the men, you could look at what they did and say they, you know, losing in the first round, no. But overall, Tommy Lloyd maxed out this roster. Can Adia Barnes say the same for hers? And that's where you wonder. And like, a couple years ago, she made the final, made the championship game. Aaron McDonald was terrific. And with Sam Thomas and Kate Reese, you know, you had Shannon Pellington come off the bench. Like, that was a loaded team with a couple stars, right? And one just mega star. Absent that, what do they have? Like a good roster, a good team, but did they get the most out of it? And that's where, I guess you don't know, right? It's a hypothetical. Yeah. There's no alternate universe with different coaching or with different players getting more run. But I think that's what you have to ask yourself. And yes, it's something you keep bringing in class after class of top flight freshmen. You hit the portal hard and you bring in talent. You're going to be there. You're going to have good teams. And it might just be getting the right mix. But that's where I think the questions come. Because yeah, I agree with you. This was a loaded roster. It's the reason why Paris Clark didn't play as much. And she's going to be good. But yeah. If you're not going to play players like that at the risk of losing them to the portal, you better win some games. You better win a lot of games and win big. And they didn't do that this season.
Yeah, I think it's a fair question. And, you know, I didn't get to watch as many of the games as I would have liked to this season, but I definitely followed them fairly closely. And look at, you know, some of that depth in the roster showed up in weird ways. And, you know, sometimes it's maybe Adia Barnes playing certain matchups. But, you know, players like Maddie Connor, Pueyo, like they would go, you know, I looked it up because I remember Pueyo had this, you know, against UCLA, she played 15 minutes on February 3rd, 4 minutes against USC, 33 against Stanford, 24, 34, you know, then in against Oregon State, she played 8 minutes and 14 minutes against West Virginia. Like, Maddie Connor had times where she was playing a lot of minutes and then wouldn't be, right? Aside right. from Shayna Pellington and Kate Reese, I'm blanking on the ASU transfer, Jade.
Joe Lavelle, yeah.
You know, outside of them, you know, there was not necessarily, you know, it was analogous to a baseball manager sometimes to me. It felt like of changing around the lineup and nobody knows.
Trying to exactly. find the right combination. Yeah,
like, and, well, you're batting leadoff this day and then you're going to bat fifth that day and like, you know, trying to find that. And, you know, I guess I'm speculating is that maybe a contributing factor to what you're saying of maximizing the roster. And that's kind of something that I maybe saw and maybe it is, maybe it isn't. Maybe there's more going on in each of those matchups or in those players where there's games where they're going to play fewer minutes or whatnot.
And it's easy for us to talk about that. We're not there. We're not the ones responsible for finding the right mix and trying to find the right combination. Some games it's different. Players are playing well. They're hitting their shots and put them out there. And some of it's matchup based for sure. But I guess it goes back to, do you have faith in Adia Barnes to, it's not to say turn this around. They won 22 games this season. It wasn't a bad year at all. But do you trust her to be able to get things going and continue progressing, right? Like they had a kind of, I don't want to say fluky run to the championship game, but they got there a little bit sooner than expected. Had they not done that, the expectations would be different. What Arizona's done the last couple of seasons would have been totally acceptable, right? Three straight tournament bursts, that would be terrific. People wouldn't be upset about that. Kind of similar to Tommy Lloyd having a one seed his first year. It's like, whoa, what did that do to change the expectations, the trajectory of what you were supposed to be doing by year two, by year three, by year four? But as long as you still trust Adia Barnes to be the right person, and I do, then I'm comfortable with the fact that, okay, the roster is going to be remade. This is just college basketball, and that she will find the right combination that can get them back to the second weekend, you know, and then from there, who knows? But it is, it wasn't as harsh of an ending, but it's sad to see someone like Kate Reese, who gave her heart and soul to Arizona, to see her career come to a close. Shayna Pellington, who was great for Arizona after coming over as a transfer, her career coming to a close. And it's, you feel good about what they contributed, right? Like those two battled as Wildcats. You just feel better they couldn't come out on top or that they couldn't win a few more games.
Yeah, I think I think that's all entirely fair and accurate.
So it's going to be a busy offseason for basketball.
Right? Sure is, Adam.
It's
sure
already is. Started. Like, I mean, I guess it's always sad when you see good players or players that you like enter the portal. But at the same time, when you bring in good players, it's always nice. So it's like, I don't know. That's just the nature of the portal. Players are going to go. Players are going to come. It's just college sports, college basketball. So get used to it.
Yep.
And players have to leave before others can come in. So this is the hard part now. The good part, the fun part will start coming probably over the coming weeks and months. So, Brett, let's take one more break and we come back. Football. Spring football has been happening. Also some baseball and softball. Let's go over some news and notes.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510, is he declaring an emergency? There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
We're back. One more segment to go. And Brett, I didn't tease it. We also have a mailbag to get to. So before we get into the news and notes of Arizona football, baseball, softball, and whatever else, we did ask people on our Twitter at Wildcat Radio AZ to just give us their questions, because we figured with all the basketball stuff that went down and some of the football things that are happening, there might be some questions. So, Brett, what do we got?
So I'm going to give you this first one from Peter Mendoza at PDJM11. I'm going to start with this one because I think I've already made my opinion clear on this one in an earlier segment. Peter asks, how fun will it be to see the fan base meltdown when Kirk Carissa goes to Xavier and makes the Final Four next season? So I ask you this, Adam, because I think I've already answered it.
I think they would melt down less over the Kirk Carissa making the Final Four than Sean Miller making the Final Four. So hopefully Sean Miller makes it this season, I guess, so it doesn't have to worry about, you don't have to combine the Miller and Carissa portion of it. But I mean, I think to that extent, it depends on what Arizona does too, right? You know, if Arizona's really good, they say they go get one of these transfer point guards, or Colin Bezel comes in and is averaging 15 points and 5 assists a game, which is better. How could you be upset? You know? But certainly, if Sean Miller makes a Final Four before Arizona does, oh boy. I think the meltdown will be, that'd be enough on its own. Absent, you don't even need Kirk Carissa for that one. The Sean Miller making the Final Four first, that would just, yeah, that would be it.
Yeah. I'm actually rooting for both of them. And also, don't make me go back to hating on everyone's terrible Sean Miller takes on both sides and Kirk Carissa takes on both sides, because you're all wrong for different reasons.
I have no problem with either of them. I wish them both the most, you know, all the success in the world.
Yeah.
But all right. If Sean Miller gets to a Final Four before Arizona does, yeah.
Well, there's going to be a lot of conversation. I'm going to hit the mute button on Twitter probably pretty fast that day.
But good question. Good, fun question.
Yeah. All right.
It's fun right now because we don't have to worry about it.
We have a three-parter. So, you know, we had three people respond, but this one is a three-part question.
All right.
Do you want me to break this up or hit them all at once?
Yeah, your call. Dealer's choice.
All right. So this is from the underscore dude 1121 at the same name. Guesses who starts... as to who starts at right tackle and left tackle.
Well, left tackle is going to be Jordan Morgan, assuming he's healthy, right? Like that.
Well, that's a big assumption.
Yeah.
To start the year.
But
I'm reading this as week one, Adam.
I haven't heard anything negative about his rehab, you know? So I'm going to say, I mean, Jordan Morgan's your left tackle. Like that's it. Right tackle, that's a good question, right? Haven't they been looking at Borjon a little bit there, and Sam Lange, and even Big Jonah, I think, at times? Like, I wouldn't be shocked if it's Borjon. Like 6'8", 320, he's a big boy, and I think they like Lange in kind of like that swing lineman role. Mm-hmm. But certainly replacing Peyton Fears, you're not replacing your best lineman, but he was your starter. So right now I think Borjon, I know he's a transfer, or yeah, like a JUCO transfer, big, big boy. I could see him getting the nod early on.
So I think your answers are pretty good, other than the, you know, just cop out obvious answer of Jordan Morgan. I'm actually going to assume that week one, Jordan Morgan is maybe not.
Well, then
starting.
Lange's going to be the left tackle.
That's what I was going to. I think he's going to start at left tackle, but I also think that even when Morgan comes back, even if it's in a couple weeks, I think Lange's going to go to the bench and just play that first guy off the bench and in the rotation, regardless of position. I like your Borjon answer. You know,
it's a shame. Was it Ippolito? The four star lineman, is that
Raymond Polito?
Yeah. It's a shame he's not in for spring ball, because that's the type of guy with his pedigree you'd think might be able to make a run at like a right tackle job or something as a freshman.
Well, and he may. Well, and don't forget, Rhino Adam Green will pronounce his last name, who's supposedly looked pretty good in camp.
Rhino T.
And then also, you know, somebody that there's a realistic chance. I also do think that Big Jonah could get time at right tackle, but I don't like that. I think it depends on a few other things and how it plays out. One of which, the starting right tackle may not currently be on the roster. It's the O lineman that is speculated highly to enter the transfer portal. I can't remember if he's publicly announced, but the portal's not technically open, from San Diego State. I think his name is, I believe it was Josh Simmons, if I recall correctly. You know, Arizona's going to certainly kick the tires on him. And I think if he comes to Arizona after spring football, that kind of triggers a domino effect of some of those things, where I don't think Big Jonah is going to play right tackle. You know, Rhino and Raymond Polito maybe don't get forced into a starting spot. Maybe they get some, you know, run, but they probably try to maintain their red shirts, get them some experience. And then, you know, the Jordan Morgan health question is a real one, at least to start the season. You know, so if you want the darkest horse possible, it's the guy that's not even on the roster in Josh Simmons.
The nice thing, the reason I don't like Big Jonah getting the right, I like him at guard. I think, like, I totally understand you want guys to have positional flexibility, especially along the offensive line. But if you have someone who's going to just be a stud at that one spot, let him excel there, right? Like, and I think Big Jonah, but he's still young, and if they think he can be a tackle, then if that's their best lineup, fine. But what I think you're seeing, too, is there's a lot of names here where Arizona has brought in under Jed Fish, and especially the last couple of off seasons, just more and more potential along the offensive line. Like, it's huge that Jordan Morgan comes back, and if he can get healthy, that sets everything up. Like, Baker was fine at center, right? And he seemed to get that yips over with, you know, towards the end of the season. His snaps were fine. Mm-hmm. You have your center, and you have your left tackle. Those are arguably your two most important positions along the offensive line, and they should be set. And for the other three spots, you have options, you have potential, and you don't necessarily feel bad about it, right? Yeah.
I was going to say,
Big Jonah, he's set at one of the spots. I assume right guard. So you have your left guard and your right tackle. But either way, like Wendell Moe, yeah. I like him. He came on strong at the end of last season, too. So I like the makeup of this offensive line group.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think Arizona has, even Josh Simmons or not, there's honest to God talent and depth at that position where...
Drink.
I'd call the offensive line one of the strongest position groups on the roster.
It very well could be. Because the other groups are weak.
No,
it's actually not bad.
I don't know what to do with my hands, because I don't know if I've said those words about Arizona football in a long time, about the O-line room being, you know, among the best. In a long time. But yeah, I think we've exhausted all of the options and went sideways across the line. And there's good things, I think, to come on there.
Agreed.
So the second question of the Dude 1121's three questions, you better not get this one wrong, Adam, as we're recording on March 23rd. Boswell or Kerr at point guard?
Well, I assume this question was, or this one was asked before Kerr Kreisa entered the transfer portal. But if
it was indeed.
But we could frame this as, who do we prefer to have at point guard next season?
I like that.
And I mean, obviously, it's like a couple. I'd go Boswell. I think his potential to be a better defender, he seemed to be a more consistent shooter by the end of the season, too, just more athletic and more willing to drive the ball to the basket. I'm excited to see what Boswell has after an offseason where he's not rehabbing, where he's actually just trying to get better and work on his craft. And like you mentioned earlier, Brett, in our first segment about him kind of being the dog, like he... It's hard to come in and be a true freshman, a 17-year-old, if you can imagine that. He's 17 this season.
Is he?
Coming off the bench, playing spot minutes, and whatever his role was in practices and everything, and be the guy, be the point guard, be a leader out there, right? But give him an offseason with whatever group they have, hopefully in workouts, playing, running the show, And I imagine he could be more of that leader, more of that vocal, more of that dog type of player out there, because he'll have the support of the team around him. So I think Boswell has a higher ceiling than Kirk Kreisa, and therefore I would choose Boswell for next season.
Yeah, I agree. I would say Boswell is the more balanced player and has more upside. Even this year, even if he wasn't the best, you know, option this year, at least not for the entirety of the season, I would love Boswell at 18 starting and a Kirk Kreisa off the bench as a point guard, but that's not the world in which we live in or are going to live in. So
like, I wouldn't have lost Boswell at the expense of keeping Kreisa. And I think Boswell, what he could be next season, same thing like any point guard needs. They need some talent around them. Yep. But Boswell, especially by the way he played towards the end of the season, he made some not so great plays in the Princeton game. But what he was doing by the end of the season, he was a pretty reliable player off the bench and was consistent from three, played pretty good defense, would take some jumpers, even some 2-point shots. Whoa. So
point guard,
I'm excited about
that.
Yeah, I'm excited about what he could be for Arizona next season.
Yeah, I agree. All right, so the last of this trifecta from the Dude 1121. Adam, expand the Pac-10 or join the Big 12?
I'm kind of team Big 12. I don't see the downside necessarily, especially with UCLA and USC leaving. And I would, who are you bringing? Are you bringing San Diego State? Okay, that's cool, I guess. You know, like, that's solid football and solid basketball, obviously. But who else? Who else are you bringing in?
That's SMU, man.
Like, that's not, doesn't really move, you know, doesn't get excited. Whereas, and I know it's mostly for basketball, but being in the, you know, TCU, Kansas, Baylor, right? Like,
yeah.
Kansas State, like, basketball wise, could you imagine being in the Big 12 or whatever? I mean, like, be awesome. Especially without UCLA being in the pack anymore.
And don't forget, no more Pac-12 refs.
I mean, we just get to hate Big 12 refs, I'm sure, too.
I'm sure.
But yeah, I this is one of those, like, grass is always greener, you always want what you can't have. Just, I'm curious to see what the Pac-12 can come up with in terms of the additions, because I don't know if there's anyone out there that would make me go, yeah. Because now you look at, I mean, let's just look at basketball, because that's Arizona's main sport. Who are going to be exciting games in conference now? In 2 years, who are you going to be excited to play in conference?
The ghost of Dana Altman.
Right? Like, is Oregon your best rival now? I mean, it's not ASU as much as they want to be Arizona's rival. They're just not. Utah? Like, it just doesn't, you know, it doesn't get you excited. And football-wise, I don't think it'd be a drop-off in football to go to the Big 12. It'd be an upgrade there, too. It'd be harder. But basketball-wise, it'd be a challenge. Like, yeah. Arizona would be a, I don't know if Arizona would walk in and be the best program. They wouldn't be, but they'd be among the best in a really strong conference. So I think that would be, that's really enticing to me.
Well, and I think an interesting question that is of the many layers of this, of what's best for Arizona, which I think is kind of what the Dude 1121 is asking, you know, what are the impacts on recruiting? You know, do you change, you know, for Jed Fisch when they're focused on California, if they go to the Big 12, does that fundamentally change that? Do they go more into Texas? You know, is it more basketball focused from Arizona's perspective? There's a lot of those things. I want to give two creative jerk answers. There's an entire possibility that both things are going to happen for the Pac-12 expanding and Arizona joining the Big 12 in subsequent years. You know, not at the same time, but it like both things could in fact happen in the next 2 to 3 years. And also my personal favorite that I think there's multiple options for this that should have happened probably a couple of years ago, and all parties would be in a better spot, but they need to get over themselves. I think there should be the mega conference partner, like formal partnership, either with like the ACC or with the Big 12 to salvage the pack. But, you know, I don't know if that's a viable thing, at least not for a few years. I think the most likely, I think the Pac-12, the Pac-10 is going to expand as quickly as possible. I don't think that necessarily saves it permanently. And then I think it's either going to go mega conference or the corner schools are going to go to the Big 12. Yeah. And I don't know if any other option is realistic in the medium to long term.
There you go. I can go with that.
All right. Let me find our last one. I'm UA100 emoji at MP Shrike, I think. asks, it's early, but how do the linebackers look? Is there a D lineman that can force a double team at some point? We're a mediocre defense away from a bowl, which is not a, it was more of a statement there at the end rather than a question.
It's a fact. It's a factual statement as far as they go. Obviously we're not down there looking at watching camp, and I have a camp is another time to be like, hey, they're going to be good at this position. You're going against each other and you see what the team wants you to see, right? They're not showing you everything, but certainly the potential is there. The linebacker was better than it was last season. Like, you lost Jerry Roberts, sure. You lost Hunter Eccles, but the freshmen that are going to hopefully take a leap this next season, you bring in Justin Flo, for example, like pairing him with Jacob Manu. Everything I've read is about how those two play really well with each other, and they're really looking forward to playing with each other, kind of leading that defense. And that's an aggressive couple of linebackers, you know, who aren't afraid to hit people and to kind of set a tone for you. So I certainly like the potential there. And the defensive line, I mean, Kangaika came on strong last year. Savea was solid. Deuce Davis could be a type, you know, Sterling Lane, the other Deuce, Isaiah Ward. Yeah, like there's so many guys there that can play that role. And I don't think they're going to command a double team, but they can't ignore them is what I'm guessing. Like, I'm excited to see the growth from those guys from last year to this year.
Yeah, I think I agree. You know, one of the last times we were talking football when we had Justin Spears on, I was texting him afterwards. I'm very excited at the notion of Jacob Manu next to Justin Flo. And I said we should nickname them Hustle and Flo. And Justin Spears said we should put it on a t-shirt, and then made a reference to the movie for people that don't know what I'm talking about. You know, there's a really intriguing amount of potential on the D line. There's linebackers, you know, the Washington linebacker whose name is Daniel, Adam can pronounce the last name.
No, I cannot.
well, you know, there's, I from the reports are that he's looking really good in practice. You know, there's the was it Oren Patu, the Cal transfer?
Yeah, Cal transfer.
You know, on the edge to go along with the Deuce combo, the Deuce Davis, the Deuce Lane, you know, Russell Davis and Sterling Lane. Isaiah Ward is a guy that, if you know, I've talked about when I got, you know, I got to see in person and be like, oh man, if that guy puts some weight on, he just, you know, he has that athletic just look and build, lanky, and just looks like he's going to be a guy that if he puts it together, you know, look out. Mm-hmm. You know, Tia Savea, maybe. I think Tyler Manoa, the transfer from is coming in, probably playing
from
defensive
UCLA.
Tackle. You know, there's, I don't know if there's a surefire double team guy there, but maybe it's, you know, people will have to just, that'll emerge throughout the season. But I think collectively the front seven is solid, especially in the linebacker room compared to last year. And don't, you know, don't sleep on, you know, as much as we are going to miss Christian Woolen Wallace, you know, I'm really excited to see what the young corners can do.
Yeah.
Right. Takario Davis and, along with Ephesians Prysock, you still have Traydon Stukes, that I think they've been moving him to the nickel spot, which I think, you know, Traydon Stukes is a competent corner, and I think he's a massive upgrade in a nickel compared to what has been there in the past, certainly in terms of coverage. You know, so if we're talking average defense, the talent is certainly there, and that means bowl game, baby.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So yeah, is that our mailbag questions? Good questions.
Those are our mailbag questions. We have done.
I know I teach things like football talk and other things, and that's a lot of, we talked a lot of football there. We'll save football. We've already kind of had a long show today, Brett. So we'll save that. We'll get maybe Justin Spears on. He's covering Arizona football. We'll talk to someone who's down there, really get a good insight into what they're doing. You know, spring sports, baseball, up and down, softball up and down. I think we'd be honest, like Arizona Diver Delaney Schnell, Pac-12 Women's Diver of the Year, won the NCAA National Championship in platform diving, I think, last week. So congratulations to Delaney on that one. And I think that's probably the best way to end it here, you know, with something like, you know, something positive. Like, that's great.
No, that is great. I was going to say other positive news. The, you know, they got a top 1,000 defensive commit on the football team, too.
Yeah.
You can pronounce his name again.
Why do you assume I can pronounce these guys' names? I cannot. I mean, Caravaggio, probably.
Well, I was more referring to his first name.
No.
I don't. It starts with an M, but I don't think it's pronounced no, Adam.
No. But yeah, so that's good. But we'll have more football, of course, down the road. Now that basketball has come to a close, we can definitely turn our attention to the gridiron. But everyone, we appreciate your questions on our Twitter. Of course, that's Wildcat Radio AZ is the handle. We'll do those mailbag segments occasionally. But if you just have a question, feel free to shoot it over and we'll get to it. You know, if I remember to tease it anyway, I'll get better at that. I promise. Of course, you can find us on iTunes, on Spotify. Subscribe to us on both platforms. If you're on iTunes, leave us a rating and review, and we'll read that review on the air. But otherwise, we'll have a lot to talk about in the coming shows, in the next few weeks, of course, with transfer portal news and football and the spring sports. And whatever happens, we will talk about it. But until next week, remember to bear down.
Bear down.